This is an interview with Mr. Ted Hirsch for Youngstown State University Oral History Department by Stephen Conce at 372 West North Avenue on April 25th, 3:30. Mr. Hirsch, where were you born?
I was born in west part of Ohio, continental Ohio. And then I attended the graded schools there in the elementary school system, and was double promoted once, so that after that double promotion, that's really taking 2 years of elementary in 1 year. And then I went to a one-room rural school where we had an excellent teacher there, and she double promoted me again, so that I really only spent 6 years in elementary school and then went to high school. At that time, there was a state examination that made you eligible to be admitted to the high school called the Boxwell Examination, and that was originated out of the Department of Education of Columbus. And I passed that and went into high school at quite a young age, particularly, and having really skipped 2 years, you might say. Then after that, I went to high school and took 1 year of county normal school after graduating from high school. And yet, I finished all of that before I was quite 16 years of age. And at that time, there was a scarcity of teachers, and they employed me in a one-room rural school.
What year was that, Mr. Hirsch?
I'm not sure what the calendar year, but they employed me there, and I had 3 years of elementary teaching experience.
So you asked
right out of the county normal school. They only required 1 year of county normal to teach elementary.
So you were actually teaching at
16 years old. And I had 3 years in the elementary school there. 53 in the first school, and I remember distinctly that my first grade pupils, number 8 out of that 53. And
you had 53 in one classroom?
Yeah.
It was a one-room school?
One-room school. And in that way, then of course, after outlining all of that work for the different grades, why, you really were busy, because it was grade 1, 2, 3, 4, and on up to 8th grade in that one-room rural school where I taught for 3 years.
Would you say it was difficult to teach that many at one time?
Was it is difficult because you'd have to organize so much material, but we used oftentimes pretty specific texts as a basis of that reading and arithmetic and so forth, the fundamentals of elementary education, and made very good progress. And then, of course, World War I came along, and I went into service then and got 2 years of service, military service there at that. Immediately following that, and then went back and finished my college at Ohio Northern to get my bachelor's degree in chemical engineering. But there, there were no engineering jobs when I graduated. You just couldn't get a job in chemistry and that, but I always liked chemistry, and so I had a major in chemistry and a major in the math.
So that was after World War One.
Right.
That's when you got your degree.
That would be, I started back in 1918, that would be. And
To go back to the one-room classroom for that, did the children help one another quite a bit?
Not a great deal. It was pretty much the pupil helping the student, that is through the textbook and the guidance of the teacher. In other words, there was little time for each grade that you had to outline things pretty carefully for the pupil and then check up at your class recitation to see whether they were making adequate progress on that grade level that you had. But it was not too much. I think you picked up a great deal from the upper grades as a lower grade student, but as far as it being inter-student, it was not a situation like that. It was pretty much textbook, teacher, and guidance in the grade level in which they were located.
So after you got your degree, then what did you do following the degree?
Following the degree, I took a high school teaching job in the middle school, and then more commonly called junior high. And
where was this, Mr.?
This was at Continental. That experience, I kind of established myself as pretty much a person that thought that a student should learn something of respect for law and order along with the education. Otherwise, they might use it to disadvantage rather than to the benefit of society. And then from there, I was given, after 2 years of high school experience, I went to as principal up at Sylvania, Ohio, if you know where that is. And then from principal of Sylvania and teacher of chemistry at that time, principal also taught a class or two. And from then to superintendent of Sylvania and then superintendent here. But in the educational area, I went on then and got my master's degree from University of Michigan, and then went to Harvard and completed all of my doctor's degree except their language requirement. And I figured it was hardly worth to me to get a doctor's degree there. That is, take a year off and get a meet that Harvard language requirement. And so I just completed what formal education I had at Harvard then.
Just to go back for a minute, what did you take a year off to get your master's and then?
No, I took that in the summers. And because when I was in Sylvania, I was only 45 minutes from there, and they required you to take, I think it was 4 summers, and you could take 1 year or extension during the year on Saturday classes, Friday night or Saturday classes.
When you did your doctoral work, were you a superintendent in East Palestine, or were you still in Sylvania?
I was here in East Palestine at that time.
And what did you have to do? Take a leave of absence, or how did it work?
No, that was, they admitted me at Harvard so that I could take that work in the summertime, and then I would maybe take 4 summer terms there for that part of it.
And you had and a they family? Were education. Did you have a family? Were you married now?
Yeah, we married when I was in Sylvania, and so there was just the wife and I when we came here, and we had a little bad luck with a daughter, and so we, and then we had a son, and when after we were here for several years.
When you arrived in East Palestine, that was 1934?
I moved in so that my contract started August the 1st, 1934.
How would you describe the school system when you came here, as far as the size of the school system, how many teachers, and maybe a little bit of the curriculum they had when you came?
Well, at that time, East Palestine always kept in the small city classification, and with that limitation, with not very many pupils from out surrounding area, our attendance was maybe 1,500, something like that.
No buses school. At this time.
No buses at all. Everybody walked to school, and that was one of the things that the Board of Education wouldn't take in any of the outlying territory at that time, because they would have had to gone into school busing transportation, and they just wanted to stay away from it because that expense fell upon the local Board of Education at that time. We didn't have state help like at the present time, where the state shares a portion of the expense and that. But then after they began to share the expense of transportation, Negley area was always very friendly toward us, and they didn't want to go into the Beaver Local District, and so finally voted to join with us. And then the Unity District next voted 100% to go with us, rather than go when the Department of Education required them to affiliate with some school that had the full 12 years, rather than at that time Unity had only the 8th grade up here at the center. And at that time, they chose to go here, so that way we have in our school district extending to the north up to the Firestone Farm there, just outside of Columbiana. And it's the Negley district is adjoining the Beaver Local to the south that way.
And how many buildings were you responsible for when you came?
Well, when I came in 1934, we had a Wood Street building that was built. I don't remember the exact age that, but I dug out some old papers at that time to get a little history, and the headlines on the papers in this county when they opened that Wood Street building was that it was the best educational building in Columbiana County. And I Of course, coming here in 34, why, it was rather hard for me to realize that the school building had made quite a lot of progress, a great deal of progress after that, and then it was discarded and torn down. But basically, the East Palestine district was noted for its college preparatory work here. It was basically for the professional person, the doctor, the lawyer, the preacher, and that type of person, not catering to education. And we were beginning to need that because there was need more vocational education. And so we tried to move in that direction because when I came here, they had a two-room portable building that housed the vocational department, which was started with one teacher, and then there were two teachers and so forth. And the other thing, we never had a paid instrumental music band before that. In fact, the Department of Education and the seat didn't consider instrumental music as an area of educational participation. And your state auditor's office always ruled that you couldn't take money, tax money, to pay for that sort of thing that wasn't legally represented or legally recognized in Ohio.
How many principals did you have that were under you, and was there one principal for each building?
One principal for each building at that time, and it was a case of requirements for principals was not very strict at that time, and it was more the competence and administrative ability with not even a bachelor's degree required. Just as an example, Miss Iva Stewart, she only had 2 years, and Miss Mabel Van Fossen only had 2 years of training beyond high school work at that time, and yet they were elementary principals.
So you had two women who were principals.
Right.
Yet, you know, when you think today, women are having a very difficult time getting into administration. Yet, when you came here in 1934, there already were two women.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Maybe I can ask you about the teachers. How many, offhand, if you could think, how many teachers you had? And at the time you came, we're talking about the 1930s here, did most of the teachers then, and I'm sure maybe even in the 40s, live in town?
Practically all of them lived in town here, and very few commuted from the surrounding areas. And at that time, although we were just an average on the state as far as payment of wages is concerned, we were able to get select teachers from colleges like Oberlin and Ohio Wesleyan and almost any place that you would want.
Could you, if you don't mind mentioning, how much, when you came here, how much the superintendent, what kind of salary he was given, and also what were the teachers making in the 1930s?
I don't think I should say that out loud in public because, you know, somebody else that might get this tape thinks that I was you know, we're in inflation now, and it requires a lot more money to operate, but you would be surprised. Of course, a dollar would buy so much more at that time that I think it hardly makes a fair comparison to mention that in relation to today's salaries, because immediately current teachers would begin to think that, well, that's a tremendous increase, but there's so many factors that if you get an honest comparison, you have to have some inflationary values and other things that are involved.
Did you hear teachers complain about wages in those days, like they do today?
I don't think that you heard very much, because there was an abundant supply of good professional teachers available at that time. And they be in 34, which was just following that depression, there were so many people, good people, unemployed in so many fields that it was a matter of getting bread and butter to survive.
So when you think of the 1930s here, it was never difficult for you as a superintendent to find people to fill certain vacancies.
And yet, in some of the more recent years, it was very difficult. We had to practically confine our selections to teachers available around in the smaller colleges, which are good, but those teachers at that period would come from Geneva College and Mount Union, and which are good training schools, but didn't give you the opportunity to pick a cross-section from a wider area.
When you say later years, you mean the 50s and 60s?
Yes, even the 40s and 50s in there, and then they developed there's a very scarcity of teachers that were available for employment.
When you think of the 1930s, you mentioned that your curriculum was more or less a college prep. Did you have any type of subjects related to music and art and sports? Was sports a very small part of your school system when you came? It's such a large part of school systems today.
Well, there were sports didn't dominate there as much as they do today, although from my own personal, I can't see any reason why that we shouldn't have competence in all areas of your curriculum, including sports. And football in that era was just a matter of what bigness and size, and now it's developed into a game of movement and skill and various possibilities that way.
Let's talk about the financial situation during the 30s, not so good. We've got the Depression. Did the school system ever feel a crunch as far as funds and operating costs because of the Depression, or was there always a plentiful supply and you just operated under normal conditions almost?
During those Depression years, most of the school districts of Ohio had problems of tax collection, and as a result, their funds would be limited, and then there was a permissive legislation that enabled a Board of Education to issue script in paying teachers and so forth. But East Palestine was very businesslike operated, and in all of those Depression years, they never missed a teacher payroll. They collected adequate money, even though there was maybe down to a 70% collection of taxes, that they always figured to collect enough money to have money to pay current expenses and teachers' salaries. And that was one of the reasons why I came here. Of course, at that time, the W.S. George Pottery had payroll here bimonthly of $36,000 to $42,000 every 2 weeks. And putting that much money in circulation here made them just a little different in that they had prestige in not issuing any of the script that was used to pay teachers. That script was acceptable to pay taxes and so forth, and so it moved and bought things, and stores recognized it so that they didn't have any problem in the Board of Education circulating script there. But it was a much solider, a much more solid foundation to operate on a cash money basis than on a paper money issued by the Board of Education.
The fact that there was a depression, did you have less kids coming to school because many had to help out with the family, or did the student enrollment remain steady during the 30s?
It remained very steady here all during those years. It was the dads and mothers that had the financial problem and the working, because there just was no work available or no employment available for them. And it was a matter of there weren't those government subsidies and so forth at that time at all, so that local communities had to work that out to see that their people in that community were able to be housed and eat, have food and adequate food.
Do you remember during the 1930s any unique problems with students? Were there any discipline problems, so to speak, that you really remember, or kids were pretty well behaved?
Very, very good citizens, and that was a part of our philosophy there. But of course, I always have indicated that the most important situation in a good school system is whenever you employ a new teacher to attempt to get a better one than you had before. And in other words, you can't solve all the problems of the school system in 1 year, but it takes a length of time, step by step, employing or recommending good teachers who in turn will upgrade the school system. And we had some very professional teachers in right following those Depression years, because it was a pretty selective group with abundance of teachers available.
And you would say the community and the parents were very much behind the schools during that period?
Parents, and they, in the smaller communities, the school was kind of the center of the activities about which that area participated. During those war years, I remember one particular thing where the federal employment office asked us to help a great deal in harvesting crops, and this being an apple and fruit area, the big problem was to get the orchard work done in the fall before frost, and so they asked us to participate in a apple picking setup, and we organized two groups in the high school and took 1 week off to help harvest apples and that, and at that time we picked in that week better than 38,000 bushel of apples, the students in high school. But the most appreciative one, the manager of the Firestone Farm up here called me and said, could you spare a load to help them pick up potatoes? Because at that time, the Firestone Homestead Farm up here was raising potatoes, and they planted these big Katahdin potato variety, and the soil was very fertile. Rainfall was abundant that year, and I never have seen a more abundant crop of potatoes up there. And so they took, as we took out of our group at high school, one load that we told them that we were separating the men from the boys to pick potatoes if they wanted to earn a little more than that. And I remember especially that one girl insisted that she wanted to go along with that group. She lived in Unity and had picked potatoes before, and she wanted to earn the extra money as well as the other folks. And on Monday of that week, that group picked up 1,800 bushels of potatoes on that farm after they had been lifted. And every other week it was over that, so that they averaged more than 2,000 bushels each day for that week in picking up potatoes there. And it's a beautiful week. And the next week, this was this week that we closed school was first week in October, and it was a beautiful week and dry and nice for picking up potatoes as well as apples. The next week it started to snow and that, and this Firestone Farm manager had gotten all of his potatoes under shelter at that time without having to be involved in the wet soil and sticky mud and so forth, and he was most appreciative of getting that job done. But of course the other orchard folks were very appreciative too, because the weather seemed to turn to cold and snow and rain, and in October, the second week of October. And as a result, they that was one harvesting situation during the war there. But as far as school attendance, our school attendance, and that was very good, and it took a lot of community cooperation because we didn't have a big federal government that took that over. It was all a local situation.
Right. The 1940s, how about the situation with teachers? When you think back about hiring teachers in the 40s, was there a surplus at that time again of teachers?
There was still somewhat of a surplus, but not as abundant as immediately in 34 and that period of time. But one of the other involvements, of course, was to get deferment from selective service, too. But that didn't seem to be too much of a problem because they recognized that schools were a necessary function of even during wartime.
Now, there were some changes that you you were responsible for as far as buildings. We probably passed that up, I believe. You were here when the new high school was built, is that correct?
That is correct, yes. We, in fact, most of the building improvements have taken place since I've been here. There was the high school building, which it's hard to imagine today that you could buy a high school for $290,000, which, how's that?
What year?
1936. That was 36 is when the high school was built. And we occupied it the 1st of January in 1937.
Prior to that, where had the high school been?
The high school had been where the present middle school is located before the addition was put on to the middle school. They had a you perhaps know the old part of the middle school building, and that was utilized for a high school, and that was the place where the two-room portable building functioned as vocational education.
And your building was in the middle school, your office?
Yes. And then, of course, we've had a building program whereby the auditorium was built on here. That was in the initial plan, but had to be delayed a few years to work the financial part out. And then there was the other addition onto the rear of the high school, which was completed in the 50s or 60s, along there. In the 60s, it was in the 60s, 61, and 6, and that was when the middle school addition and gymnasium was built on there at the school building.
So during this period, we talk about two new additions at the high school in the 60s and the middle school. You must have had the funds must have been adequate for you. No problem with levies in town here?
When I came here, school levies for buildings and a new high school had been defeated, and some of the folks tried to discourage us about presenting at that time, but then came along the Public Works Administration from Washington. that would take care of 45% of the cost of it. So that made it a very, what would you say, educationally a good buy, in addition to the a dollar would buy so much more at that time, that they passed that issue, and then they we had an accumulation in the bond fund that we couldn't use for anything else, and we put the auditorium on, which was in the original plan, but we thought we wouldn't have enough money to equip the new school building with new furniture and equipment of science and home ec and other departments. And so that was done the auditorium was built on shortly after the completion of the new high school building in 37. And then the other bond issue, which the people approved $650,000 for the addition to the Captain Taggart Building Elementary and the addition to the middle school there, the new part of the middle school and the gymnasium at the middle school.
So you didn't, during your stay as principal, superintendent, excuse me, wasn't a great amount of resistance as far as supporting the schools. Levies were quite successful as far as the
yes, generally speaking, the levies were quite successful. I went back and read a lot of old school board notes, minutes of the Board of Education, and the thing that I gathered from the community that when the Taggart Building and this middle school main part was built, that the people in the district could get value received for the dollars expended. And so we decided that our theme song on our board promotion was that we were going to get value received for what we spent, and I think we had such an excellent school board with business ability to work with there that it made it easy because they tried to exercise every policy possible to get value for the dollars they spent. And I'm sure that the people in the community recognize that. And
you know, when you talk about the school board, today we seem to be getting away from having professional people on the board. When you were superintendent, thinking back through your tenure in East Palestine, did you have a lot of professional people that you would say were business-minded and had a good deal of education?
Some of the, that is the two or three of those persons were executives with the George Pottery, who had college and other background experience. Another member was Dr. Atchison down here, who was a good member. And he was interested particularly in improving our music department at the time. And so we really had in the first band director and music supervisor here a man by the name of Eugene Witters, who went to Akron University as head of the music department at the college or university. And he was a capable promoter and a capable instructor and put in many more hours than the usual day that you have under other regulations. That is, he would, he did a good job in the music area. And another man on the board was a businessman who traveled for one of the paint, big paint companies here. And also his father worked, this Mr. Oliver's father worked for, I think maybe his assistant, director of education in Columbus. And so it all tied in together, but when Mr. Hisong was the state director of education, he said that in his association at that time, there was a tendency to change from Board of Education with a higher degree of education and background. And he could see that all over the state of Ohio. I don't think it was, you know, characteristic of any one community, but we did have a very excellent Board of Education that went through our high school building program. And, Mr. Bycroft, who was one of the executives over at the W.F. George Pottery, was president of the board, and he just couldn't find better folks to, and more efficient folks to work for, and their objective was to do the things that were best educationally for our school district. It wasn't a matter of political advantage or that sort of thing. It was strictly one question: what is best for education?
When you go back to the 1940s here, the students again, were they good students? Were there any discipline problems emerging, or were things, did you see any change in students now? After the war especially, did you see any difference about the community? And
well, I think that our community here has changed a little in that respect in regard to the type of the community. Different factories that have moved in have brought more of a cross-section of what you would have in an industrial community. And so I think there was some little difference in that respect. But we had very few, what do you say, citizenship and respect for law and order and that sort of thing.
No vandalism during this period. It was unheard of almost.
Almost unheard of, that's right. And of course I realized that, that when you get more of an industrialized community, why you add to that cross-section in relation to number of problems that you have, which you no doubt have experienced here in recent years too.
And as far as parents go, today I feel there's a shift to having the parents always defending the kids, and the teachers very often are wrong. When you think about the 40s and 30s even, were the teachers right, and did the parents say, if the teacher said that's the way it's going to be, that's the way it was? Were they very respected in the community?
Parents in that period of time, with very few exceptions, always respected what their guidance folks and teachers thought was the better thing to do. And for that reason, we we felt as though very, very seldom would we ever have to take a case of school citizenship over to the probate judge or a place like that. Of course, even at that time, they said that we were we utilized the probate court the least of any one of the schools in the county, but we just didn't have problems like at some of the other industrialized cities at that time. It was more just an atmosphere of cooperation and trying to get a good education for and the cooperation of the parents who very much have the evidence in 99% of the cases.
Well, how about if we go to the 1950s? Are there any things that stand out in your mind? Some changes took place in the school system? Any unique things in the community that you can think of?
Well, from the time that we built the building over here, we tried to give more vocational work here, because at that time we didn't have a special vocational school, and for that reason we tried to add to the curriculum, and we had you know, a little more of a guidance operation, but not anywhere equal to the personnel that you have in the guidance department that is required by the State Department of Education nowadays. It was most of the guidance was a professional arrangement with the teacher and the pupil. And of course, that's always one of the reasons why excellent professional teachers are important in the school system. That's the basic, and you can't solve all those problems in a day, but you can improve them all the time.
By the 1950s, could you see the government getting more involved in schools and education and funding, more or less trying to dictate, or could you more or less still run your own show here in East Palestine, what the community wanted?
Here we participated very little in federal projects, and so we didn't get into some of those federal activities that are pretty commonplace now. As an example, whenever, in the first place, I think the Constitution says that the major responsibility for education is with each of the states of the United States. And through some of these funny financial programs of the federal government, it's crept into the place where they provide some of the money, and they also tell you the range of the things that are involved as far as they're concerned. As an example, I have understood that the present administration were asked why that we didn't have more minorities in the you would never get anything like that out of Washington before, and it's interesting to me, because I believe that education as a whole will be will make more progress and will advance more, even though there are some states may be down a little in educational values, but there are other states that are so much higher in educational values that when you begin to average it up, I think that education will be better off if it were delegated to the local community and the state rather than out of Washington.
During the 50s, when we have the Russians putting off Sputnik, there's a sort of a drive for science programs in math. Do you recall anything in East Palestine related to this?
Yes. When that thought was publicized, like immediately the nation seemed to want two things, science and math. But from my point of view, science and math, since I have majors in them, those two areas, but they got to the place where that was the only areas that you needed. And it was maybe overemphasized for a while, although subjects like chemistry and science have made tremendous steps of progress in that period. I think they forgot that there are other areas in the arts and which also need competent people in those areas.
So East Palestine didn't jump on the bandwagon as far as that. You already had programs involved with that.
Yes, we had programs that were involved and programs, and I even remember one of my students from up in Sylvania that has remained a friend at the time. He took chemical engineering and also mechanical combination of those. And immediately when the atom bomb was being developed, he was assigned a responsible job to help produce that. And those folks were kept on the base there, and all of their letters that went out of there were censored by those officials so that for about a year and a half, when he'd write to me, he'd write me a two-page letter that didn't say anything, and we were accustomed to getting quite a little information because he had a college engineering in chemistry and that. And then, of course, after they dropped that atomic bomb on Japan, why, I understood why he couldn't say anything about the things that were common to us in communication that way. But it was, I often joke with him now about it. I couldn't understand for about a year and a half.
So your curriculum in the 50s more or less stayed the same. It was still college prep, geared to the college prep students. Who were your principals during the 1940s and 50s? Could you recall some of those people that served under you?
Yes, one who's retiring this year was Mr. Cooper, was principal, and he is up near Rootstown as local superintendent of that area, retiring this year. We've had, very good help in that direction, and we had a few problems. We didn't want our new building defaced, and we spent time to track those little things down so that they didn't get out of hand, and we would correct them. And those principals were very capable and persons who had objectives of utilizing education for the worthwhile values rather than as an example. Well, it's an example of respect for law and order, and it follows over from education into adulthood when they're trained in some of those areas of that type.
You mentioned Mr. Cooper. Do you remember any other teachers or principals who were in East Palestine who moved on and became quite successful in education or other areas? Was there any you could name?
Well, there were. We have many persons who have moved on educationally and to more successful places, and
maybe those that stand out in your mind, if you could think of.
And the ones that you think of occasionally, it takes you know, conspicuous. I think that it's no different in the educational field of progress. Folks who've been here, that it is with football coaches or any others. You've had many that have maybe had their first position here and then become, you know, head coaches. And of course, anything out beyond the public, why, it is a little more easily evaluated by the public than it is something where it mostly happens in the classroom and in the areas of education. We've had a lot of very capable science teachers here. Those that have gone, like Mr. Dickey, went on and got his doctor's degree down in chemistry at Ohio State, and many different ones that way. That Mr. Henning was another one, and that would apply to almost any area of our educational system there. But the objective always was to get a better teacher whenever you had a vacancy. And I think you do those things just step by step, and yet those are the measures of the successes of individuals like that in science or math, or they see it a little more conspicuously in the area, because the downtown folks tend to evaluate them by the wins and the losses, and that isn't as easily done in your curriculum area or the teaching area that way. That is, there's fewer front page headlines, something of that sort. But,
when you were superintendent, did community, did you feel community pressure as far as the coaches went if they weren't winning? Like, there's community pressure today in schools, or really the community didn't exert that pressure on the administration.
I think you always have that community pressure on almost any situation there. And of course, if you attain a group who have had abundant teaching success, just like Mr. Zettel over here is an outstanding science and physics chemistry teacher. He doesn't make the headlines like those other things, but he should make the headlines if we were trying to recognize him. And yet, I think I only remember of one time when he was recognized as being a good teacher. And he isn't the only good teacher, but there are many others just as deserving of that. But it's just a part of the system that they don't recognize the other categories of education as they should really be given recognition.
And to close out the 50s, and he's balancing here, do we still have the parents supporting the schools, and the students, are they still pretty well behaved? And or when you see the 60s approaching, do you see more of a change in students here, or still things pretty good?
Of course, I don't have enough contact with students since 62, because my retirement was in August of 1962, but you always have some pressures and that sort of thing. But on the other hand, we didn't seem to notice any outstanding difference up to 62 when I left there, although you always have some few problems in the school system, but you don't spend your major time trying to solve them. Now, I think with circumstances since then, just as I've observed as an outsider, that there are more problems of vandalism and disrespect for law and order, and perhaps it reflects something the adult philosophy as well as the student philosophy. It may be a part of what they get at home in relation to citizenship.
So you were in East Palestine as superintendent until 1962, and that would give you about 28 years as superintendent. Today they say the average superintendent is in one school for from 3 to 5 years. What would you attribute to your long stay as superintendent and your success with the community for 28 years?
Oh, I don't think that you can place it any one place, that is, any particular one reason. It's just a matter of the picture, although my friends and superintendent friends used to kid me a little about that, and I said, well, I've had opportunities to go to Conneaut, Ohio, up here, which is supposed to be an advancement, but I couldn't see much difference in what I had and that. But it's for that reason that it's kind of a combination of some things, although I think when I was back to University of Michigan conferring with some of the educational folks, they said up there at the placement office that some of the folks think that the hazard of administrative jobs now is so great that the salary differential isn't worth that many headaches. And so I think that every place you recognize that there are, more problems.
But you must have been pleasing the people in the community. I'm sure that they were quite satisfied with what was going on. Otherwise, I don't think you would have been rehired year after year with 20 years. Looking back on your 28 years as superintendent East Palestine, if there were any changes you would have liked to have seen, or if you were able to make them, what things would they be? Maybe something that, looking back in retrospect, and say, I always wanted to do this in the school system. Can you think of any, or were there ever any?
Well, I think that every educational system has opportunities for improvement, and no matter whether it was 30 years ago or today, and there should be changes made to improve the school system, and I think there always will be things that we learn and that will improve them, this educational system, and on that basis, it's just a matter of setting up your priorities in relation to what is of greater importance and what is of lesser importance, and just as I mentioned before, that you can't solve all the problems of the world in one day or one year or a very short length of time. But if you continuously improve all of those categories in relation to what your priorities have been established by the administration and the board, then I think that the opportunities for improvement now, and there will be 10 years hence, things that we know, like many areas where we do not have all the facts of the situation as to whether it does improve the situation, but if it improves it, that change should be made. And I think that's with us now, as well as, 20 years back or 20 years ahead, there's still the opportunities to better and improve education by change.
After your retirement in 62, you stayed in East Palestine in your present home here now. Were there any things in East Palestine as far as education that you could see some changes as to maybe you didn't particularly like, or you wish hadn't come about? Were there any things that you saw changing that maybe were inevitable in a way, when looking back after your retirement? And we can go right to the 70s, too, when you think about the 60s and 70s in education. More or less, speaking to East Palestine, what changes did you see that surprised you or never thought would happen?
Well, I personally thought that we were a little slow here on vocational education. But again, I don't know whether they have the right solution now or not. In Mahoning County, they have one vocational school for that whole county, and they do a splendid job over there. Here in the county, we have a vocational school at East Liverpool, we have a vocational school at Salem, And Salem had one of the better ones even back in my time there, because industry helped finance them, because it helped prepare the folks for the jobs that were available in Salem. But maybe, you know, second guessing, you would say, that I was just a little routine of vocational school here, one in the county, but when one was granted East Liverpool and Salem wanted one, and then that just left a little center area here available, which doesn't permit a vocational school equal to the Mahoning County school here.
You said that there was a portable building here which had a type of vocational instruction for students, right? Years ago?
Yeah, but it was a minimum.
Yeah. Did you always actually feel that you weren't meeting the needs of some of those students? Did you want to enlarge the vocational school here in East Palestine when you were superintendent?
Well, I would have been happy if we would have had more money to spend for, because vocational schools require a lot of equipment to familiarize, to keep the students with different types of employable occupations that way. And as I said before, that when we moved over here, we made a step up and improved locally here, and so that it wasn't that we didn't make any improvement, but we there was need in Ohio for a greater amount of vocational trade to fit or to prepare the folks who were going into industry, and it helps industry too because of a greater skill and competence in that area. It's just, you know, one of the categories of education that way.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Mr. Hirsch, for allowing me to interview.
Appreciate having a nice chat with you this afternoon. I hope I've covered something of interest for you.